Okay, high time now for our tune of the week.
Come on, let's go.
This is the Media Industry Guru Show, the show that exposes you to entertainment, music, film, TV, and tech.
We're online 24/7. 24/7.
You're listening to the hottest internet station.
And we are back on the Media Industry Guru podcast. Here today is Andrew Portwood. He grew up in Colorado, working at concerts and festivals, sneaking into Red Rocks. He has a lot of professional and personal mentors along the way in this epic music industry journey. He went to Belmont and worked at the Ryman Auditorium, and now currently owns his own firm called Fox Pocket. So here today, we will learn about his eclectic experience from Colorado to Nashville to New Orleans, also working for the Joy Theater as the general manager with AEG and Winter Circle, and a bunch of other venues, including Howlin' Wolf and Marketing and DBA. So let's welcome Andrew Portwood.
Hey, Andrew. Welcome to the Media Industry Guru podcast. Really excited to hear your eclectic background, your entrepreneurial mindset, as well as your experience, your very eclectic experience working in the music industry.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me, Forbes.
So you grew up in Colorado, right? You did not grow up in New Orleans. Tell us a little bit about your experience there. What made you decide to work in the music industry? Did you have any experiences within music growing up in Colorado?
Yeah, grew up in Denver, right in the Front Range in Colorado. Got a guitar when I was 11 and started playing music. Really enjoyed that and had a great teacher. And got involved with the high school programs. Did music theory and music tech lab, and was working with Digital Performer and really enjoying all of that. And got into promoting shows with other local high school bands and working with other local talents to just do coffee shop shows and the event venues that would let us come in as high school students to do do music and promote shows. But my first gig was at Cervantes Masterpiece. I think I was 13 years old. We played on the stage there, and it was funny having that experience. And then I was parking cars at Red Rocks. I was wow. I think my first show at Red Rocks was Blues Traveler back in 94, I think, was when my parents took me up there for the 4th of July experience up there. But started seeing the jam bands that would come through in the summers, and meeting all the guys that were traveling all over the country to come in to see those performances at Red Rocks. So I had a pretty rich musical community out there in Colorado. The outdoor music scene during the summer was incomparable to anywhere else, and was able to go to a lot of festivals, see some homegrown things. 97.3 KBCO was the local kind of independent, I guess, kind of radio station. I think it was bought by Clear Channel, but they were based out of Boulder, so I would go up and go to radio summits up there and just and just kind of got to absorb a lot of the Colorado music community when I was in high school and in those formative years of getting introduced to not just music, but the music industry as well.
So would you say being surrounded by that versus being in a hub, a more music centric hub like LA or New York, it was easier to break in?
It was a little bit of both. I think it was still those formative years of independent ticketing. String Cheese Incident was kind of on the cusp of that and getting started with their group with Music Today and doing all of that with Z2 Entertainment and Don Strasberg and those guys were all kind of like just starting on that independent train. So yeah, it was a tighter knit community for sure, and it seemed like everybody knew each other's names even though we hadn't met type of situations. So it was I think there was some things that I got out of the industries in the other cities a little bit further along in my career, but I think being a young person in that and seeing how that was all kind of developing, and that was still right on the cusp of digital music and things, and the death of the CD and the birth of the MP3 was also kind of the independent ticketing was coming into play at the same time. So it was a very transitional time for it. So I don't know if it was an advantage or disadvantage on any of that, but it was definitely a tight-knit community for for sure.
Yeah, that is interesting because, like, as a high schooler, you're trying to, like, just basically graduate high school. You do those extracurriculars, but you don't get involved in, like, work stuff or, like, know, like, what some high schoolers don't know what they want to study, what industry they want to go in, but you just plunged in right then and there in Colorado at Red Rocks and got that eclectic experience. And then you went after to Nashville at Belmont and studied the music industry. And tell us about your experiences in Nashville, what that was like working for the Ryman Auditorium, any other experiences there?
Yeah. So I moved to Nashville in 2005. I had had a music major at Iowa State University going out of Colorado and stayed at Iowa State for 2 years and studied music and marketing there. And then, you know, did some research in music business programs. Iowa was great, but it just wasn't quite my spot for the music industry. So moved down to Nashville and jumped into the music business program at Belmont and really enjoyed that program. It was flourishing with lots of young talent and really great talent on the recording side and as well as just the business side and great teachers. You know, some of my peers were Moon Taxi and some of the bands that came out, I think the Florida Georgia Line were also in my graduating class. But I really started to lean towards, after the first year at Belmont, I did, I think, 35 sessions in RCA Studio B and really kind of focused on the recording side of things for a little while. But again, with the industry being in the turmoil of trying to figure out what was going to be happening with recorded music, I started helping out this guy Brian Wagner. He was running a company called Flashpoint Entertainment that was booking the Cannery Row two venues, the Mercy Lounge and the Cannery Row Ballroom there. And so I was able to go in and you know, learn under him on promoting shows. We did a concert series called the Cannery Row Revival, where it was $5 and we had Soul Asylum and Humphreys McGee and Mini Kiss and all of these other bands come in, and we did shows out in the parking lot where we built the stage from scratch. And then, you know, wow, also did the late night shows inside. We did two nights with the Raconteurs right when they came out with Consolers of the Lonely. So got to work with Jack White a little bit during those times. You know, had Carl Denson and Dumpsta Funk and a lot of the New Orleans stuff kind of come up and got introduced to some of that music by just way of touring. But got to learn the venue side of things on that end of it with Flashpoint and with those two venues. And, you know, was starting to promote shows and do shows at the Basement and do shows at Windows on the Cumberland and do shows at the little venues on Demumbrium. And I was going down to Station Inn and seeing bluegrass and kind of getting introduced to the whole bluegrass side of music and just seeing all types of stuff and really got into the promotion side with those two venues, and then just kind of spread out and really got to dive into a lot of Nashville those first couple years. And then graduated Belmont and went to work at the Ryman. Brian Wagner had moved from the Mercy Cannery Ballroom to the Ryman to be the marketing director over there. He hired me to come in to be basically just administrative staff. So I got to see how those, you know, how a real theater was run, and the Ryman being, you know, the mother church of country music. And I went in there and learned the Ticketmaster system and worked in the box office. They put me on doing tours in the actual auditorium during the daytime hours. So I was able to learn a lot of history about the building, give the backstage tours, talk about, you know, Patsy Cline and Johnny Cash and all of that. You know, by the time I think I graduated Belmont, I was standing side stage at the Ryman, and we were standing there with all my managers, and Bob Dylan was sound checking. Wow. And Jack White had showed up to sit in with him, and Bob Dylan was playing, you know, sound checking his organ, and he was smoking a cigarette, and the Ryman is all it's an all wooden building, so, you know, it's very frowned upon to have any smoking in there. And so my managers look at me and they'd say, you know, you got to go tell Bob to put his cigarette out. And I went white face and I was like, oh no, what is going on? So I like took one step and looked back at them, and they were all laughing at me. So they covered me in this big Ryman blanket that they had gotten me for graduation, and said, no, we'll go take care of this. You don't need to tell Bob Dylan to put his cigarette out. So have some very fond memories of the Ryman, and got to work with Hatch Show Prince and really just learn kind of all of the ins and outs, from the operational to the private event side, to the ticketing, to the production side. You know, I got to work a stagehand for multiple events. We had 3 nights of Widespread Panic, 2 nights of Wilco. I got to meet John Paul Jones and do Ben Harper shows and all the late night bluegrass and the country festival stuff that would come through, and we'd be in there until, you know, 24 hours a day and doing bluegrass concerts at 5 a.m. So kind of gave me my my first taste of those late night jazz fests. You know, adventures that we've had down in New Orleans as well.
Wow, you've done a lot since, like, when you were in school and then after school, just in that short period of time. So I really want to unpack this. When you were in school, working for the Basement, the Ryman Auditorium, other venues, etc., were those more like internship experiences, freelance gigs, side hustles? It wasn't your typical 9-to-5, right?
Right. Definitely more of the freelance and internship. I started with Flashpoint as an intern. He paid me. He was paying me minimum wage, and it was something I was spending, you know, a good deal of my time outside of the classroom doing that, and getting that real world experience outside of the studio sessions we were you know, had to do for our major, and outside of the business projects we needed to do on the business side of things. So a lot of that was internship driven, at least with Flashpoint and with Brian Wagner at the Ryman. And then, you know, outside of that, doing the other events that I was able to put on, I kind of was an independent promoter, and I would put on Moon Taxi concerts or concerts with other local Belmont and Vanderbilt bands. I booked a lot of the bands for a lot of the fraternities that were over at Vanderbilt, and, you know, just kind of knew some of the local jam bands as well that were in the scene that would come in and, you know, go and play these parties for, you know, $500 to $1,000 and help them kind of get in there. They'd give me a little cut of it. I'd, you know, kind of go and just fill the calendar for some of these other venues and help that. Did a couple of shows at the Exit Inn, at Cafe Coco, and some of the stuff just around Nashville. So it was really just a thriving music scene for young people at that point in time. And I think, you know, I was still pretty young, 21, 22 years old, and definitely driven. So, you know, sleep wasn't needed much, but, you know, it was a really fun time to be in Nashville and collaborate with a lot of, friends down there. I was involved with the radio at Belmont too. We had a radio hour called the PG Experience, which was with my college roommate, Carl Gaddy. And we had a radio show every Friday from 4 to 5 p.m. We would go on, and the radio show was only on the internet, which was very interesting because, you know, that was still early days for internet radio. And then it was also broadcasted over our television in all of the dorms at Belmont, which was pretty fun to do. But yeah, I think Carl is the production manager now at the Brooklyn Bowl in Nashville. I think Live Nation's gonna have a conference down here this week as well. But yeah, you know, anything that we could really do in those formative years in Nashville, it was really, you know, really focused on anything that we could do, whether it was internship or just us going out and freelancing and just figuring out how to make an extra buck to go out to the bars and enjoy a drink and play some darts after we got all this stuff done. Yeah. So, you know, it was more on that side of things versus trying to really drive our career at that point. I think we were all just having fun and enjoying collaborating and enjoying music and learning about as many different revenue streams as we possibly could to be able to make ends meet for ourselves.
Wow. So you've worked with artists, independent artists over at Vanderbilt, Belmont. You worked in college radio. You've worked in the live event space. What were some key takeaways from all these different diverse experiences, and did you have any challenges along the way, or what were some rewarding aspects of all learning about the different sectors of the music industry?
You know, there was a lot of learning curves. You know, I lost my ass a few times promoting shows, and you know, kind of realized what talent buying was, and that was a big lesson on my end. You know, there were some very rewarding experiences of just sharing, you know, very collaborative projects with multiple people, and then all of us standing on stage at the end of it and being so young. And you know, we've had Taylor Swift and Colby Calais do a show for Grammy U, and you know, my buddy and I just had built the whole stage, ran all the cabling, sound and lighting outside for a group that didn't really know what was going on, and we got thanked by Toby Keith and his record label and all that type of stuff. And you know, I think the main lesson I took away from a lot of it, and I think watching the mentors and the people, you know, a little bit older than me as well, was really their level of you know, comfortability and even just being cool, I think, is the end of it, is just, you know, how they would react with tact and the way that we would react to a situation, instead of seeing somebody, you know, freak out and kind of not really have their head on straight and try to react without knowledge. You saw these guys really take their time to assess the situation and go through what the possible scenarios could be for the best solution. And I think that was the one thing I took out of it going into the rest of my adulthood, was really seeing how these guys kept their cool through the situation. Obviously still had fun when the time was to have fun, but when the work needed to be done, worked with the teammates and the team they had put together to find the best solution to, you know, make sure that the show went on, you know, started on time and everybody had a good time with it. Yeah.
And then you also went from Nashville to New Orleans. When you were in Nashville, you mentioned that you worked with a lot of New Orleans clients, such as like Dumpster Funk is from New Orleans. What made you decide to transition to working there permanently now?
Yeah, I had, during my time at Belmont, I had a friend, childhood friend. We were in a band together, and had a band for a long time since. He had evacuated from New Orleans up to Nashville and come and stayed with me. I went down and started doing some, you know, just community service projects with him after the Hurricane Katrina. Came down in 2006, did Mardi Gras for the first time in 2006, that first year back, and just kind of fell in love with New Orleans. I mean, it's a romantic city and a beautiful place. And then went to Jazz Fest for the first time in 2007. Played a couple shows at the Maple Leaf, at the Carrollton Station and stuff like that. And really just kind of gained an affinity for New Orleans and the live music culture. And, you know, I really enjoyed the southern eastern part of America. I was really enjoying Nashville, but I think the funk and the music stylings of New Orleans just kind of resonated with me when I was that age. And so I enjoyed starting to come down here, and I started to come down to New Orleans a lot more. Started working for the Jazz Festival, with Steve Ray and Associates, doing some of their like marketing surveys and things like that during the festival to help get us tickets into Jazz Fest. And then started working with the local venues, Howlin' Wolf, Maple Leaf, you know, anything that we can really do to get that going. I think one of our first gigs was at the Avenue Pub. We did Circle Bar. We had done a bunch of venues where we were just playing music, helping musicians kind of come in and join us on shows. We had played shows, I think, with the Revivalists. We all did a show after one of those Tulane Crawfests, where I think there's video somewhere of all of us playing Superstition. And, you know, those were all of our old friends. And then, you know, we were connected in Colorado growing up there, and would bring the New Orleans bands up to Nashville and out to Colorado, and just kind of made that connection of musicians helping musicians at that point in time. From 2007 to about 2012 was when I was really doing things kind of on my own, helping a band that I was in and then helping other bands that were traveling through, Flow Tribe, and you know, anybody that was coming through on that you know, mid-tier level of helping them kind of find their footing in the markets that, you know, at least I had some connections in.
During that time, you also worked for a few venues, including Howlin' Wolf and then the Joy Theater. Were those at separate periods of time, or did you do those?
Basically, I was living in Colorado, helping out. I was working for Vail Resorts, doing some on-mountain booking and you know, booking in some of the other local venues around Vail, Colorado, about 2010 to 2012. And I had met this guy Barry Mendelson down in Dallas, and we just started talking. He was friends with my uncle down there, and we just started talking about New Orleans and, you know, how I'd been down there working for the Jazz Fest and worked for the Ryman and so on and so forth. And he said he had just bought a theater in New Orleans called the Joy Theater when he was looking for somebody to come down and manage ticketing and front of house operations for him. So in spring of 2013, towards the end of the ski season, in March, I had my first phone interview with the manager at that point in time down here in New Orleans, and did my phone interview on the ski slopes because I was coming down from working one of the venues up on the mountain, and sat down on my snowboard and put my phone in my ear and had that interview there, and then flew down and got to view the Joy Theater, the 2013 Jazz Fest in, and I was just like, man, this place is something else. So started full time and moved down July 2013 full-time to New Orleans and started as front of house manager, doing ticketing and front of house operations at the Joy, which morphed into a production manager position, which I held at the Joy until 2017. And that's when AEG, Winter Circle Productions, had leased out the building, and they brought me on as general manager for the Joy at that point in time. So a lot of my formative years were spent at the Joy Theater down here in New Orleans, and that was the main reason I had moved down to New Orleans, was to, you know, really get the Joy Theater off the ground and running for this guy Barry. He ended up letting go of his managing portion of it, I think, in 2014, right at the end, maybe beginning of 2015. And then I was working with the ownership group until AEG leased it out. And worked for AEG from 2017 until they had to let go of the lease at the end of 2020 over at the Joy. And that's kind of, that was my tenure spent over there. I hadn't been working with too many other venues. I was still working some freelance festivals and working with other venues, and had a great time working with AEG and those GMs as well. John Caprio and a lot of the guys in Colorado were great formative GMs that taught me a lot of tricks with the AEG group to be able to just find maximizing profit and different ways you could, you know, help out venue, help out artists, help out, you know, ticketing companies and so on and so forth. So it was a great experience working, you know, with Winter Circle and with AEG as well. And the Joy Theater, you know, still one of my all-time favorite venues. I got to put in a brand new D&B audio system in there. Got to go to school up in Asheville, North Carolina. D&B gave us, you know, full certification, went through a whole four-day course with that sound system, and still can run one of those systems at any point in time. But yeah, it's a really special place in my heart over at the Joy, and I still love the venue very much and still do some shows over there, occasionally. So that was really the main reason to come down to New Orleans full time, was the Joy Theater.
Working at the Joy Theater, your typical day-to-day, could you elaborate on what a typical day-to-day is like? Because each artist that performs at the Joy Theater is very different. So I'm assuming setting it up, the promo, just putting on the whole event from the ground up, it's very different each week, right?
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting time to go through it, and going from, you know, working with local promoters and setting up, hey, here's your hold on the calendar, into a confirmation, into, you know, announce this week with ticket pre-sale Wednesday, ticket on sale Thursday, public on sale on Friday, and you know, getting that, and then from there, 2 weeks out, we would advance the show, and then, you know, 48 hours in advance, I'd do a pre-settlement to where I'd send out, hey, here's where we're at. Here's what our expenses are looking like based off of the numbers we have. Do you guys want to cut anything? Do you want to add anything? You know, this is what we're looking at. And then, you know, day of, show up in between 9 a.m. and 12 p.m., sometimes earlier, sometimes a little later, with a full stage crew. You know, we had, I think the best thing about the Joy was the team that was over there. They were all, you know, just veterans of the New Orleans scene, all still young, but still, you know, worked at House of Blues and Howlin' Wolf and all these different venues all over the city. And they really knew their stuff, and it was really fun to have them and have that whole stage crew. And then we'd get the band loaded in, you know, set up for sound check. All that was running, make sure that the, you know, working with the runners and the merch crew and making sure that they have everything they need from money to meals. And then, you know, we'd get the doors open an hour before doors. We'd do a security meeting with the ticketing managers and tour managers and event staff and security staff, get the doors open and, you know, get the show happening, show running. You know, sometimes you'd run into something that would happen that you need to take care of, run into, you know, a kid passing out in the bathroom or something from having too much fun the night before and staying out all day the day of. And then, you know, we had a good team though, and everybody knew kind of how to respond to those situations. and a great team working there, and I couldn't be, you know, more appreciative to everybody that I was able to work with over at the Joy. But yeah, and then, you know, set it down and I'd go talk to the stage manager and tell him, hey, you know, I'm going to be up in the office settling with the tour manager. Let me know if you need anything. Right when those lights come up, you guys start breaking down your stage and getting the cases, you know, set up in whatever pack you need to get back on that truck. You know, usually closing the truck doors in between, you know, 1 a.m. and 4 a.m. and send them out on the road. And if it was Jazz Fest, we'd do it all again the next morning, or we might have to do it in an hour and bring another band in and, you know, then go back and then, you know, day after do any kind of final settlements with anything we possibly have missed the night of, or if, you know, and then do any internal settlements that I would need to do with the management and ownership groups at each point in time there. And then, you know, the other days, you know, just facility maintenance when, you know, these old buildings in New Orleans, when bathrooms break or air conditioning units, or, you know, you got water intrusion over here, or, you know, the walls falling apart over here from a road case hitting it somewhere, or needing to get the sprinkler system tested or the lighting system tested and, you know, troubleshooting whatever you could. It was definitely a full-time job. Plus another one on top of it at that point in time, really trying to get that place going. But, you know, that was a typical day over there, and really enjoyed it for the time I was over there.
Yeah, it seems each day is very fun-filled, packed, exciting, challenging. You have to put out fires, but at the end of the day, you're helping artists and their careers grow and evolve, so that's the best part of it, and seeing the fans engage with the artist.
Yeah.
So what made you, so after working for the Joy Theater, you created Fox Pocket. Tell us a little bit about it. What made you decide to launch this, and was this before or after COVID, during COVID?
So I had kind of left the city in May 2020 and went up to back to Colorado to stay with some friends in Telluride for the summer. I was planning on going out there. I always go, we, as you know, family, go out to Telluride bluegrass a lot. I enjoy playing bluegrass and always go out to Telluride that June. It always falls over my birthday. So went out there and did the summer out there during pandemic and you know, started Fox Pocket towards the end of that summer, beginning of the fall. We were doing, I was working with a couple business, you know, just associates, friends in the business, that we were doing a lot of these online stage managing gigs where we would show people, you know, hey, you know, they still were doing those digital conferences. We bring them into a waiting room, show them how to square up, you know, make test their microphone, test, you know, their video, making sure everything was good there. And so, you know, at that time, I think we were all out of work, still trying to figure out what was going on. And we had started Fox Pocket basically as an idea. And then, you know, went in and we were like, well, let's just see if we can just start this business. Let's get, you know, registered with the IRS and get that, you know, that tax document going. So at least we've got it. You know, we didn't really have any plans with it besides, hey, here's some tertiary income for us. Maybe if we start this business, we can write off some of these expenses that we've got coming on right now. So, yeah. And looked at it, you know, and started it as more of a plan to be able to have a group of individuals with us that can assist, you know, people in events and help them in getting it reopening. I think I was moonlighting that fall with NOLA Protection doing, you know, I was working security at the Saints games. And like anything that we were kind of doing was just trying to figure out what that next step is going to be and how people can reopen safely at that point. So it was later in the fall in 2020 that we started to, you know, to start Fox Pocket. And that's kind of what we started as, was just the plan was to have it as, you know, something to write off any expenses that we had it for the time in between that we had income coming in, and something that, you know, we could ultimately go out and consult with people on how to reopen their venues safely as needed. Because, you know, as us in the industry, we were all trying to figure out, you know, what the next step was, and people were taking online courses on what we needed to do to keep people safe and kind of move towards that next step of, hey, you know, what do we do next? So we were just trying to, you know, continue our educations and not be too bored and go too broke and,
yeah,
you know, manage the time that we had at that point in time.
Yeah. It was definitely a lull for sure, but yeah, it seems like you kept busy and very proactive during that time. And so what are your upcoming goals with Fox Pocket? Do you have any professional goals with that, or any professional goals within the music industry, or even personal goals?
Yeah, I mean, with Fox Pocket, it's really grown. We went from, you know, basically started with Fox Pocket. Our first client was DBA down in Frenchman Street, and helping them get reopened. Had partnered with Tom Thayer down there to do those DBA at Palace Market concert series that we did outside in what was the Frenchman Art Market at that point. We had talked to the owner down there to, you know, work with the city and put on outdoor events safely out there as it started to reopen in early 2021. And we were permitted to do outdoor events there. So that was our first kind of real client with Fox Pocket to handle their ticketing and, you know, reopening. And then, you know, we started to get a lot more with multiple event organizers. We help out an event called Grid Life, which is a motorsports festival and motorsports group that does a lot of car race events along, you know, paired with EDM music, hip hop music, that type of stuff. Started working with, you know, a few other clients, and it really turned into more than just a consulting and ticketing group. And we started to take on a lot of the consulting and management side of things to help people out where, you know, they're coming back with an event and they need, you know, front gate management or production management or operations management. And, you know, we have a good connection with a lot of people that we've worked with over the years with events and festivals and private events and conferences and things like that. So kind of, turned into an event services group outside of just consulting. And then we started getting calls from artists. And so we started to help book some artists and doing some more of the artist management side of things, of helping artists get, you know, figuring out their tertiary income. And we call it just profit pockets is kind of our term for things as Fox Pocket goes, and ways that, you know, you can make some of that profit back for yourself as an entertainer or as a bar owner or as a venue owner or a ticketing group or an operations group, and figuring out what those efficiencies can be. So, you know, our goal, we did a lot of events, you know, with 2021, our main focus was DBA. We had brought in another group, smaller venue that was just getting opened on Frenchman Street. And then, you know, going into 2022, we reopened the Frenchman Art Bazaar, and had, we brought the artists back in there as vendors, and worked with that community to get that up and going again. We had a lease with that owner for a few months at the beginning of the year. We've since passed on the lease to, the current, who was helping us GM at the time. And so he's now taken that on, and the Frenchman Art Bazaar is up and running, Thursday through Monday nights there. And that was a great project to jump on. And, you know, we had, the Helen Wolf just came on as a client at the end of the summer. So now we're helping them with their calendar management. Yeah, thank you. And so we're helping, the Helen Wolf with their calendar management and, you know, ticketing solutions and special events and just trying to, you know, get that venue back to having shows again and that end of things. But, you know, now we're doing some talent buying as well. We're promoting some shows and producing some shows on our own. And, you know, selling tickets on our own and then renting out venues and working with multiple event spaces in New Orleans, as well as private events. We've been doing a lot of the special events for DBA and for other venues, where someone comes in and needs some expertise. We can help to point them in the right direction, connect them with vendors and really curate an event from top to bottom. You know, I think our goal, we also this fall, signed a contract with Afropunk, and we were the festival consultants for Afropunk up in Brooklyn this year. So we helped them and helped them with their organization and vendors up in New York City in September. And then we ran the front gates and ticketing operations for Wakan Music Festival in Arkansas. And that was at the beginning of October. And then we worked with NOLA by NOLA here in New Orleans and helped out, you know, the venue partners that we've got now, navigate that system and bring in, you know, some additional artists that, you know, we probably couldn't have done without the help of the tourism board here in New Orleans. So, you know, we had a lot of projects come in, in 2022, yeah, that we weren't really planning on doing. So I think, you know, our goal is to, you know, step up our preparedness here over the next couple months to really look at the contracts that we can bring in. And you know, this year we're on deck to support Hogs for the Cause with operational needs, again, support Grid Life, Wakan, and some other events that are coming down the pipeline here that I can't talk to yet, but that are exciting that are coming in for 2023. So yeah, I think the main goal is trying to balance as many projects as we possibly can, yeah. and deliver the same, you know, consistent results that we enjoy working with our venue partners, our hospitality partners, our you know, concert partners, our artist partners, everybody in between.
And as we wrap up this episode, any last tips, parting words that you'd like to share to rising industry professionals on any different sector of the music or entertainment industry?
I'm kind of keeping the same form of what, you know, my mentor is taught me: be cool. You know, it's at the end of the day, you know, it's not an industry where you need to worry about too much. It's the music business, and everybody's here to smile and have a good time. So you know, don't take yourself too seriously, and be cool through this situation, and you know, always find those solutions for help people out. Obviously, is my other advice. Is it, no matter what you're doing, as long as you're helping others, you know, that's the main thing. You know, artists really, if you play music yourself and you've been on stage before, you know that feeling, and helping others achieve that feeling is also very rewarding as well. So I think, like I said, I think the main thing, just be cool.
Yeah, be cool and pay it forward. I know that there's that quote that says, like, keep calm, or I guess we can keep cool.
yeah, exactly.
Well, thank you, Andrew, for being on the Media Industry Guru podcast. Wishing you great success with Fox Pocket as you handle all those great clients for their upcoming projects, their huge events for Hogs for a Cause next year, as well as for many other venues, and hope to see you maybe at a New Orleans venue.
Sounds great, Forbes. I appreciate the time today.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of the Media Industry Guru Podcast. Check out the Instagram at Media Industry Guru for all the details on the latest and coolest upcoming episodes that you will here. Email at mediaindustrygurupodcast@gmail.com for any other interviews that you would like to hear, or if you would like to be on the air and give a little promo or talk about yourself, or just even chat with me, because you know I'm doing this, I'm invested in this. And tune in weekly, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, on Tuesdays on the Anchor app, Spotify, Stitcher, Pocket Cast, Breaker, and many more streaming platforms. Thanks again for all of the support, and peace out, and let's rock and roll.